So thank you everyone for coming, even on our rescheduled day. Going outside today, I don't think anyone would have believed that last week we had to cancel for an ice storm. I don't think you know the half of it. It wasn't even just the ice storm last week, right? It was the ice storm plus there was a funeral in the building and Adam is a Kohen. So he wasn't allowed in the building, so we would have had to cancel him and we would have come up with a backup cheer. It was everything that could have gone wrong last week went wrong. But today, welcome to spring. So I'll be honest, giving shiurim during the Omer is always a little bit disconcerting. You know, you always try when you're a public speaker to always look put together, but any shiur during Svira means that no matter what, I just started. Yes. Oh, you want to make an announcement? Go. Okay. What? Oh, sorry. Jonathan Ziering, I'm the Sgan Rosh Beit Midrash of Yeshiva University Torah Matzian Beit Midrash Zichron Dov. I think I've met most of you at some point. So it's a bit disconcerting because whatever custom you have, not shaving all of Svira, not shaving some of Svira, you know, not shaving except for on Erev Shabbos, which is the position of my teacher, still, unless you've just shaved, it's just disconcerting, you're a bit scruffy. So I want to talk about Svira, but not actually about the Nehugei Avelos, not the morning customs, but the mitzvah, the central commandment of this period, which, despite the fact that when we think Omer, we tend to think of all those morning practices, whether it be the not shaving, the no weddings, music, whatever it might be, the real mitzvah of Svira Omer is counting the Omer. Right, it made it easy. Right, my brother-in-law gave birth. His wife gave birth this morning. This morning, it's very easy to figure out the Pidyon HaBen. Right, I know we're counting. Right, if I know what today is, so I know. Okay, it's the day after Shavuos. Right, I can count. It's very easy. Right, we're counting. That's the mitzvah to count, to know from Pesach to Shavuos. We count 49 days. That is the mitzvah. However, in the Torah, when the mitzvah is presented, the mitzvah is presented that we count from the day on which you cut the Omer, because the Omer was an actual sacrifice that was brought on Pesach. Right? On Pesach, we would bring a grain offering from the first cut barley. And we count from then till Shavuos when we bring the next meal offering. We bring the Shtei Alechem. We bring a offering of two breads made of wheat on Shavuot. And the central question that the Gemara really deals with is, once we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, we don't have the temple, and we're no longer bringing the sacrifice, we're no longer bringing the Omer, do we or do we not have to count at all? Right, do we have to count the Omer? So that's the first source that you have here. And the Gemara in Menachot tells you as follows, Gufa Amar Abaye mitzvah limimne yome u'mitzvah limimne shavuot. When you count the Omer, it's as we do. You count days and weeks. Today is 20, right? You will say always, it's X number of days, which is X number of weeks plus X number of days to the Omer. 22, which is 3 weeks, 1 day, right? That's what you're going to do. Rabbanan Debeir of Ashi Manu Yomei Manu Shvuei, and that was the practice in the yeshiva of Rav Ashi. But Ameimar Mane Yomei Velo Mane Shavuei. But Ameimar used to only count days. He would say, today is 22 days. But he would not say, it is 3 weeks and 1 day. Why? So Amar Zecher L'Mikdashu. He said, counting the Omer is merely a commemoration of that which took place in the time of the temple, and therefore, while in the time of the temple, they would have counted, today is 22 days, which is 3 weeks and 1 day to the Omer, now we no longer need to do that, because our counting of the Omer is different. Our counting of the Omer is a mere commemoration, and therefore we do a symbolic count, right? We just count the days, and we leave off the weeks, to show that the commemoration is incomplete. And in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, when there was actually a sacrifice, So then, once you brought the sacrifice, you are now obligated to count the Omer. Now, there's no sacrifice, you're not biblically obligated. And therefore, we don't count the full way they did in the time of the temple. Now, there is quite a discussion in the medieval commentaries, in the Rishonim, what exactly is going on here. And I'm going to summarize it briefly, but I want to get to a different point. But here's going to be the background. We count days and weeks, right? Today is 22 days, which is 3 weeks and one day. What does that tell us about how we relate to the counting of the Omer? Right? Amemar had posited that nowadays the Beit HaMikdash doesn't exist, and therefore the obligation to count is a mere commemoration, and therefore we do this incomplete count, days without weeks. But we don't do that. We do a complete count. So what does that tell us about how we paskin, how we rule? So one possibility is that we reject this entire analysis. And this is the position of the Rambam. The Rambam Maimonides says that this is not really the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer, of counting the Omer, is independent of the sacrifice. It's simply a mitzvah to count from Pesach to Shavuot, and therefore, with or without the sacrifice, there's a biblical mitzvah to count. Today is X number of days and X number of weeks, and to count for 49 days, 7 weeks. And the reason that nowadays we count a full count, days and weeks, is because we think, not like a Amemar, we think that there's a biblical command to count the Omer. However, the majority of the medieval commentaries disagreed with the Rambam and felt not that way, and they said as follows. Everybody agrees that on a biblical level, if you don't bring the Korban HaOmer, you aren't bringing the sacrifice, you don't have to count. Everybody agrees that when we count nowadays, it's merely rabbinic as a commemoration for the Beit HaMikdash, for what they did in the time of the temple. The question is, when you decide you're going to commemorate the Mikdash, how do you do it? And do you say, look, biblically I no longer have to count, but nowadays, even though I don't have to count, I'm going to mimic what we did in the time of the temple at a rabbinic level? Or do you say that because something is missing, we're going to change the actual mitzvah itself, so that every time I count, it's evident that something is lacking? Meaning, everyone agrees that Sfirat HaOmer nowadays is just a commemoration of what happened in the temple, but they're arguing, when you want to commemorate something, how do you do it? Do you do it by mimicking? In which case, you would count days and weeks, or do you change something? This is the question I want to analyze, because here, I think this forces us to ask very important questions about how do we want to remember the Beit HaMikdash, and what do we do to remember it? So, we have many different mitzvot to commemorate the Mikdash, right? Many different mitzvot. What types of things do we do to commemorate the Mikdash? I'll throw it out to you. Right, so one thing, we read about the Karbanot. Right, what else do we do? What types of things do we do? We read Karbanot. What else? Right, and we formulate in our tefillot that something is lacking, but let this take the place, right? Let our sacrifices be replaced, so to speak, by our tefillot. Yeah. Right, we have all types of symbolic acts. The Zroah on the Seder plate. Korech at the Seder, right? Zecher leMikdash keHillel. This is what Hillel used to do when the Beit HaMikdash. What else do we do? What?
Lulav v'Netrog.
We're going to come back to Lulav v'Netrog, but yes, Lulav v'Netrog, because on a biblical level, we only shake the Lulav v'Netrog. We only take the Lulav v'Netrog one day outside the Beit HaMikdash, and 7 days in the Beit HaMikdash, but nowadays we do it 7 days outside the Beit HaMikdash because of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and we're going to come back to that one. Yeah. Right, sort of. That's for Truma.
In Israel, they celebrate Pesach not for 2 nights, only 1 night.
Well, so that, right, so the Yom Tov Sheni we do in Israel.
Here we do 2 nights.
Right, so that's, well, it's really us, right? Meaning we are commemorating the fact, sort of, that they're used, you know, in Chutz Laaretz, we used to not be privy to the information that the holidays had been, or Rosh Chodesh had been declared. There's other sort of very, there's a whole category we haven't talked about, which is, right, we mourn, right? There's all types of mourning practices that we have, right? We leave an amma al amma, we leave one square amma unpainted, unplastered in our house, right? Assuming you're making your own house, that's what you do, right? You leave an amma unplastered. If you buy a house, right, which is already plastered, question how you deal with this. But if you, but we break a glass at a wedding. We put ashes on the head of the chatan, on the head of the groom. We have mourning practices throughout the year. We have Tisha B'Av. We have all the fast days that mourn the Beit HaMikdash. So one way that we remember the Beit HaMikdash is by mourning. Right, is by mourning. And I gave you, for example, I gave you a number three. This is the central passage in the Gemara that deals with it at the end of the third parak in Bava Batra, where the Gemara tells you, Ein misaydin, v'ein mechayrin, v'ein mefaychin bizman hazeh. We don't plaster or tile or paint on our houses, which means fully, as the Gemara goes on to explain, right, we leave part of our house unplastered. And then the Gemara goes on. And the Gemara describes that after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, they struggled. How much should we mourn? Tanu Rabbanan, Kharav HaBayit B'Shniya, Rabu Prushin B'Yisrael, Shlolachol Basar V'Shlolashtot Yayin. There were many people who, after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, who decided they were never going to eat meat, they were never going to drink wine. And Rabbi Yeshua disagreed. Rabbi Yeshua went to them and said, Rabbi Yeshua amar lehen, Banai, bepnei ma, iatem ochlin basar, benatem shotin yayin. Why aren't you drinking wine? Why aren't you eating meat? Amru lo, nochal basar, shemenu makriven agave mizbech, vachshav batel. Meat used to be brought on this as sacrifices, and now we're going to eat meat? And we can't, it's too painful. And every time we're going to eat meat, we're going to remember that it used to be we could sacrifice it, and now we can't. Yayin, how could we drink wine? Sheminaschin al gabe mizbech v'achshav batel. They used to pour libations, and we're going to drink wine. Amar lehen, he said to them, look, I get it. You want to mourn. You can't do this to yourself. Right? You can't mourn that much. Because lechem lo nochal shekvar bitlu menachot. You won't eat bread because there were flour offerings. They said, sure, Efshar Beirot, we'll eat fruit. Right? We'll live on fruit. He said, really? Peirot, lo nochal shekvar batlu bikurim. There were fruit offerings. The bikurim, the first fruit. You won't have fruit. Efshar Beirot achirim. Okay, we won't have the seven species. We'll live on oranges. Right? We'll live on oranges and watermelon. He says, really? Mayim lo nishteh. So don't drink water. Shekvar batel nisu chamayim. Because on Sukkot, they used to have water libations. Shatku, they were silent. They didn't know what to say anymore. Amar lehen banais, we said to them, my children, Bov v'amor lachem shlo litabel kol ikar efshar. I can't tell you not to mourn. Shekvar nigzera gzera. Because, look, we have to mourn. The temple's been destroyed. But I can't tell you. It's not justifiable to mourn too much. We can't have decrees that nobody can handle. So what's the solution? Mourn symbolically. You can paint your house. But leave some of it unplastered. Symbolically mourn. So Rabbi Yeshua turns to them, right? So the first way we commemorate the Beit HaMikdash is to mourn. But you see that once you say you're supposed to mourn, there were two intuitions. There were those who said, if the Beit HaMikdash is gone, we have to mourn. We have to suffer everything that reminds us of the Beit HaMikdash we can't do. We need to make our life as incomplete as possible. And Rabbi Yeshua said, that can't be. What are you not going to do? You're not going to eat, you're not going to drink, right? I didn't give you the whole Gemara, but there were other portions. Other people said, let's not have children. Right? Forget it. We'll just, and this way the Jewish people will just disappear. It's not worth living. And Yeshua said, Yesh Gvul, you can't do that. Right? You can't mourn so much until you disappear. Now, what is Rabbi Shua actually saying to them? So there's an optimistic way of taking Rabbi Shua and a pessimistic way of taking Rabbi Shua. One way is to say that Rabbi Shua agrees with them. Right? You imagine the scene. Rabbi Shua is crying. They're crying. Everyone basically said, our life is over. They say, our life is over, so we're not going to eat, we're not going to drink, we're not going to have children. That's it. Life is done. The Jews are done. We're going to disappear. And Rabbi Shua says to them, I sympathize, right? I wish we could do that, but we won't survive. But I agree with you. Let's mourn as much as possible, but, you know, what you want is just too much. But that's the pessimistic way, is to say Rabbi Shua agrees with them that mourning should be as complete as possible. He's just realistic, right? That you can't mourn yourself into oblivion. Alternatively, and this is what's suggested by Rav Uri Radman, I gave you the link here, is Rabbi Shua is arguing systematically with them and saying, look, life has to go on. The way life goes on is by taking mourning and making it not all-encompassing, but making it symbolic. Right? For example, right, let's take avelut, classic avelut. At the most intense forms of avelut, you lose a relative, so until you bury the relative, everything freezes. Right? You don't do any mitzvot, you do nothing, you're an onein. Then you bury your relative, shiva is super intense. You're on the floor, you're not bathing, you're not shaving, you're not eating, you know, whatever. Shloshim, it's a little bit lighter. For a parent, 12 months, it's a little bit lighter. But after 12 months, at some point you say, I've lost a relative, that's not going to change, but life has to move on, but I don't want to forget my relative. So what do? Yahrzeit, once a year, we have a symbolic commemoration, but life otherwise moves on. We have Yizkor, we have here and there, we have commemorations, but life moves on. Rabbi Yeshua is turning to them and saying, look, we're in pain. But as pain, every painful thing in life, there's a moment of intense pain, but life continues. No matter how big the catastrophe, life continues. And therefore, don't say we're going to live in unpainted houses and not eat food and not have children. No, we're going to have children. We will survive this. We will survive. But we won't forget the Beit HaMikdash. We will have weddings. We'll build families. But at the wedding, we'll put a little ashes on the chatan's head and we'll break a glass and we'll sing Im Eshkacheich and we'll remember the Beit HaMikdash, but life will continue. And that's the way I want to take Rabbi Yeshua. That it's not just he's being pragmatic, he's being optimistic. He's saying, life can move on. Right? Don't give up on life just because we face catastrophe. But now let's move to other types of commemorations. Zecher LeMikdash. There are other types of Zecher LeMikdash that we have. So let's come back to Sfirat HaOmer. Okay? Unlike the Rambam, let's take everyone else. Here you're sitting, imagine you're sitting there, okay? It's after the Beit HaMikdash. So now, on a biblical level, according to most, we don't have to count the Omer. But everyone says, you know what, that was a beautiful practice. Right? Even without the Karban HaOmer, it's really nice. It's really beautiful that we count from Pesach to Shavuot. So you're sitting around the room. And now you say, okay, we want to keep up this practice called Sfirat HaOmer. But the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. What are we going to do? What are we going to do to properly commemorate the Mikdash now that it's not here? Now that we don't have to count, but we want to do it anyways. How are we going to commemorate it? So there's two groups sitting in the room. A Maimar pipes up and says, as the pessimist, let's say, right? He says, I have an idea. Let's count. But every time we count, let's diminish our ritual life. Meaning, we'll count. But imagine the scene, right? In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the family would get together, right? They would, you know, they would sing as a family, right? They would sing whatever, you know, L'Shem Yichud or whatever they sing, and they would, as a, together as a family, they would count, right? They would make the bracha, they would count. Today is 22 days, which is 3 weeks and 1 day. Now, Maimar says, I want to keep counting, but every time people count, I want them to tear up. I want them to remember what was. So here's what I say. Cut it in half. Only count the days and not the weeks. Because then what will happen? You'll get together as a family, and you'll say, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kidshanu Mitzvotav V'Tzivanu Al Sefirat HaOmer. Hayom Esrim U'Shnayim Yom Shnayim Esrim Yom Sheh. Right? And then your kids will be about to say Shehem, and the parents will say, no, 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 there's no Beit HaMikdash. We don't say Shehem. We don't say number of weeks. And everyone will say, why not? Last year we counted days and weeks. And you'll say, yeah, but we're missing something in our life. Our religious life is lacking. We're going to commemorate the Mikdash by diminishing our ritual life, by diminishing the religious experience. That's a Maimar. And then there's a group of optimists who pipe up and say, I have a better idea. Let's commemorate the Mikdash by acting as if nothing has changed. And Amemar turns to them, what do you mean? How is that a commemoration of the Mikdash? How are you commemorating the Mikdash by saying that nothing has changed? Last year I counted days and weeks. This year I counted days and weeks. And they say, no. What greater testament could there be to Jewish life than saying life can continue even without the Mikdash? And let's commemorate the Mikdash not by diminishing our religious life, but continuing despite the pain. Right? Let's not merely commemorate it. Let's continue living as if nothing has changed. Let's put on our bravest face and continue. Sure, last year was a biblical mitzvah. This year it's not. But let's commemorate the Mikdash by continuing living as if the Mikdash was still around. Let's make a brave attempt to create, to live a full religious life, even though we know our religious life is not complete. And therefore they said, sure, it's a Zecher LeMikdash. But one way of doing Zecher LeMikdash is diminishing your religious life. Another way is saying, no, let's continue religious life as it once was. Meaning, let's mimic what life was in the Beit HaMikdash, to prove to ourselves we can continue, we can survive. This seems to have been Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's theory on life. Right? This was his theory on life. The proper way to commemorate the Mikdash is not to diminish our religious life, but is to double down and say, if the Beit HaMikdash isn't here, but we believe that you can have full religious life without a Mikdash, let's be creative. And let's find ways of remembering the Beit HaMikdash, not in a way that will diminish our religious life, but in a way that will enhance it. Yeah?
I don't know if everybody says it, but I know I do Yuat Zonshi, but I make the Mikdash after I count. So that...
Correct, exactly. And our, I think, the Harachamanu Yachazir Lanu Avod Beit HaMikdash is part of this positive vision, that we end it by saying, God, bring back the Beit HaMikdash. But it seems to have been even more systematic than that. Now this comes. Sorry, what's your name again?
Esther.
So this comes back to what Esther mentioned before, the shaking of the lulav. The classic example, I think, is this shaking of the lulav. So look at number 4. Turn to the next page. The Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah tells you, Barishona haya halulav nital b'mikdash shiv'a. Originally, the lulav was taken 7 days in the Mikdash, uvimedina yom echad, and outside the Beit HaMikdash, once, only on the first day. Mishacharav Beit HaMikdash, but once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Sheheilulav Nital B'Medina Shiv'ah Zecher LeMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, now let's take the lulav 7 days, even outside the Beit HaMikdash. And you ask yourself, what does that mean, Zecher LeMikdash? In the time of the Mikdash, you only took the lulav 7 days in the Beit HaMikdash. If you lived outside of Yerushalayim, outside the Beit HaMikdash, you only took it on the first day. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, as soon as the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, take the lulav all 7 days, no matter where you live. How is that Zecher LeMikdash? How is that a commemoration of the Mikdash? Well, it seems to be, what is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saying? I have a better idea. You know how we'll commemorate the Mikdash? By proving to ourselves that life will continue. When the Beit HaMikdash was around, we could afford to say only those people in Yerushalayim, the Beit HaMikdash, will take the lulav 7 days. Because even though we didn't take the lulav 7 days outside the Mikdash, we knew that Jewish life was complete. But now we don't have a Mikdash to rely on. So you know what we'll do? Every shul will become our Mikdash. Every home will be our Mikdash. And we will act as if we live in the Beit HaMikdash. Right? We will enhance our religious life to make up for what we're missing. And he continues. He said, "Shiyei Yom HaNeif Kulo Asur." You know what else we'll do? There's another halacha about the Omer. Right? It's called Chadash and Yashan. We're only allowed to eat grain that was cut before the second day of Pesach. Right? And then you can, any new grain is forbidden until the next year, until Tet Zayin Nisan. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai also instituted that after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the halacha was as follows. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, on the 16th of Nisan, once the Karban was brought, once you brought the flour offering, so then you were allowed to eat the new grain. What about after the Beit HaMikdash? When are you allowed to eat the new grain? On the 16th, already in the morning, meaning, as soon, right, it used to be you had to wait for the Karban, right? You needed to both be the 16th of Nisan and to bring the sacrifice. But nowadays, we don't need the sacrifice, so as soon as you wake up on the 16th, you can eat the new grain. Or do you say, no, you have to wait till the 17th. You have to wait the whole 24 hours. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, you wait till the 17th. You know why? So if you look at the end, he says, we're worried. Mehera yibaneh ben HaMikdash. Because what happens, we're always worried that next year there'll be a Beit HaMikdash, and people won't remember. They'll say, Ishtaked milo achalnu ba'ir mizrach, achshav namenechol. He'll say, last year we were allowed to eat grain on the 16th. Why? Because they brought the karban first thing in the morning. Nowadays, right, we don't even have to wait for that. So what does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say? Other way around. He said, what will happen if you say that from now on, as soon as you wake up in the morning on the 16th, you're allowed to eat grain. Next year, when you have to wait the 2-3 hours till the karban is brought, you'll end up messing up because you'll remember that you were allowed to eat at the beginning. So what does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say? Wait till the 17th. But what's his argument? Mehera yibaneh ben HaMikdash, because I fully believe that next year we'll have a Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, what do? I set up laws that will ensure that that's in our consciousness. I say, don't eat grain the entire 16th, because I'm totally convinced that while this year we didn't have a karban haomer, next year we will. And therefore, I set up decrees that make sure that once we have a Beit HaMikdash, everything will be okay. In number 5, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai similarly said, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, we know we don't blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. But in the Beit HaMikdash, you did. In Yerushalayim, you did. There was a dispute that arose. What happens after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, now we blow shofar everywhere, even on Shabbos. Even on Shabbos. And Rabbi Elazar says, no, that's not what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said that you blow the shofar only in Yavne. What was Yavne? Yavne was where the yeshiva was. And he said, why? Because the we have replaced Yerushalayim. Right? Not really. But you know what? You think it used to be that you only blew the shofar in Yerushalayim, but nowhere else. So now you shouldn't blow it anywhere. Or you should blow it everywhere, even on Shabbos. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, according to Elazar, says, you know what? No. We may not have Yerushalayim, but we have the Sanhedrin. We have legal authority. We have something. Let's make a new Yerushalayim. Right? Let's say that in Yavne, where the Sanhedrin sits, we'll blow the shofar there. And if you read the Gemara, it sounds like there was a lot hanging on this for Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He was very insistent on this, because what happened? Once there was a dispute that arose. Should we blow the shofar in Yavne or not? The Chachamim said no. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said yes. And they were arguing. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tricked them. And he said, I have a deal. Here's my deal. We only have a few hours here, right? It's you know, Shabbos is going to be done soon. And, you know, if we get into a machloket, we get into a dispute, it's going to take days. So here's the deal. Why don't we blow this year? We'll blow the shofar this year. And then tomorrow, we'll have a discussion about what we do in future years. Right? We'll compromise. They said, okay, that's fair. We're willing to give in this year. So they blow the shofar in Yavne on Shabbos. And then the B'nai B'Teira, the rabbis, say to him, okay, we kept our part of the deal. We blew the shofar. Let's talk about it. And he turns to them and he says, why should we talk about it? We've already blown the shofar in Yavne. Everyone knows it's permitted. Right? Kfar nishma shofar b'Yavne. And that's it. Vein meshivin lacharmai. Say it's done. What's done is done. And from then on, they blew the shofar. Right? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai seems to be going out of his way to trick them. Because his philosophy of life is no. You know we're going to remember the Mikdash? We're going to make sure that life continues. I can't let you diminish our religious life. I heard once from Jonathan Sacks, right, chief rabbi. This is like his famous favorite Gemara in all of Shas. Is right this, that the way you you can use a little bit of humor and a little bit of tricks, right, to make sure there's shalom. Right, he just said, okay, machloket is over, and then after that, you don't hear any dispute. They may have been annoyed, but it was done. Right, no more fighting. But the truth is, this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's philosophy of life. In 7, one of the Gemara we read on the Churban, on Tisha B'Av, we can read about the Churban, is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, as the Beit HaMikdash was about to be destroyed, managed to escape Yerushalayim and make it to Vespasian. And Vespasian, with all the story, whatever, gave him 3 wishes. Right? What do you want? Right? What can I do for you? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Tein li Yavne v'chachameah. Right? Give me... Allow me to have a yeshiva and allow the scholars to live. Now Rabbi Kiva yells at him. Rabbi Kiva was, not directly, Rabbi Kiva is upset. He said, why didn't you ask to let the Beit HaMikdash stand? And the Gemara says, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai assumed he wouldn't listen. But what did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say? I will smuggle myself out of Yerushalayim. And what will my request be? The Beit HaMikdash may be destroyed, but give me Yavne v'chachameah. Make sure that Jewish life will continue after the Beit HaMikdash. This was his life mission. And in a beautiful way of seeing this, there's 2 stories. One is well-known, one is not, but I'm going to say them outside. Rabbi Akiva's philosophy of life was that the only way to comfort ourselves post the Beit HaMikdash is to remember that the Beit HaMikdash will one day be rebuilt. And therefore, the Gemara at the end of Makot says that Rabbi Kiva was walking with the Chachamim by the Beit HaMikdash, and he saw the foxes walking on the Beit HaMikdash, and everyone is crying. And Rabbi Kiva says, why are you crying? And Rabbi Kiva starts laughing, and they say, why are we crying? Why are you laughing? So Rabbi Kiva says to them, look, there are 2 prophecies. One is that the Beit HaMikdash will be destroyed, and one is that it will be rebuilt. If the Beit HaMikdash is in such degradation, and the prophecies were fulfilled for evil, at least I know that one day it'll be good again. And therefore I laugh because I know that one day it'll be better. Right now it's bad, but I laugh because of the future. A very similar story happens in Avot Derbi Natan Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. But it was very different. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ran into Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua is upset because the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai turns to him and he says, don't be upset. Don't give up. Not because the Beit HaMikdash is gone, but he says as follows. I'll just say it outside. He said, why are you upset? There's no karbanot? So what? We have chesed. Kindness can atone, just like karbanot. Don't worry about it. We have something. And he turns to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai and he doesn't say, you know, I'm not just happy because one day we'll have a Beit HaMikdash. You know why I'm happy? Because Jewish life isn't dead. You don't have a karban to atone for you, fine. But you have kindness. You have tefillot. You have so many other mitzvot. We may be lacking the karbanot and the Beit HaMikdash. But we can accomplish the same thing. We can learn Torah. We can daven. We can do good deeds. Life continues. Why are you down? Smile. Do what you can. Be kind, and God will forgive, just like He would with a korban. And what you see from Yochanan ben Zakkai, and coming back to Sfirat HaOmer, is he said, you know what the best testament is to Beit HaMikdash? Not like a Meimar, to say, we'll cut down to religious life. Not even like Rabbi Kiva, to say, well, things will one day be better. The best testament, the best way to commemorate the Beit HaMikdash, is to prove that we can continue, even afterwards. It's to redouble our efforts to make sure that Jewish life is not diminished. Right? It's like when someone loses a parent, right, and they say, right, the best testament is to make sure that they continue living. They continue their legacy. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, that's my life mission. Sfirat HaOmer counts as if nothing has ever changed. To prove that life goes on. You don't have karbanot? Don't give up. Find other mitzvot. You have less. You don't have to, three times a year, you don't have to schlep to the Beit HaMikdash. That's sad. But you know what? Look on the bright side. That gives you more time to, I don't know, pack packages for Tomchei Shabbos before Pesach. You don't have to commute to Yerushalayim. Take the extra time. Do chesed. And God will accept that. It used to be you only shook the lulav in the Beit HaMikdash, but we don't have Beit HaMikdash, so do it at home. Life will continue. Find creative ways of reimagining religious life. And there are other Gemara that point to this. Most famously, and I gave you in 11, that the Gemara says that once the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, we don't not have a Beit HaMikdash. What do we have? Mikdash Mat. We have shuls. And therefore, I think that as we come to Sfirat HaOmer, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's lesson should resonate. That when we're thinking about what it means to not have the Beit HaMikdash, sure, sometimes we mourn. Symbolically. But the lion's share of our efforts shouldn't be to mourning, nor should they even be to diminishing our religious life. In the spirit of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it's to say, you know what, Sfirat HaOmer may not be biblical anymore. But you know how we're going to properly commemorate the Mikdash? By acting as if nothing has ever changed. By finding ways of continuing life, of remembering our shuls may not be quite the Beit HaMikdash, but we still have shuls, we can still daven to God. We may not have karbanot, but we have kindness. We may not have a Beit HaMikdash, but we'll shake the lulav everywhere. We may not have the Karban HaOmer, but we'll count as if nothing has ever changed to prove that even with the Beit HaMikdash isn't around, its legacy lives on. And that, I think, is really what's behind this Zecher LeMikdash. It's not a mere Zecher LeMikdash. It's not a diminished religious life to remember that we no longer have the Beit HaMikdash. We merely have a commemoration. It's a commitment to saying no. The best way to commemorate the Beit HaMikdash is to say, it may not be here, but the connection to God we once had is not diminished, and we will find creative ways to make sure that when one day, Mehera Yibana Beit HaMikdash, the Jews will be no worse for the wear, and that we will have kept our religiosity and our devotion to God strong so when the Beit HaMikdash comes back, we'll be able to reintegrate those added elements of Avodat Hashem, but we won't have had 2,000 years of a diminished religious life. We will be the strongest religious people we can, and therefore be able to embrace the Beit HaMikdash as full practicing religious Jews, even as we were in pain for those thousands of years. Okay.